Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and remember, everybody, we are talking politics every day at this time through the September 14th New York primary. Today, we'll see why Republicans may now be out-tweeting, out-friending, and out-YouTubing Democrats, despite the Dems' early advantages in political social media from a few years ago. And we'll meet both candidates running in the Republican primary to run against Senator Chuck Schumer. Running down today's political checklist first, let's see what's going on. Turnout in Florida and the shocker in Alaska in Tuesday's primaries continue to be the buzz of political analysts and a lot of political websites. Both states are seen as bad omens for Democrats in November, as the Florida Republican primary drew so many more voters than the Democratic one, despite the Dems having a larger registration in the state. And as for Alaska Tea Party candidate Joe Miller, racing Senator Lisa Murkowski to a tie, they're still counting votes. John Dickerson, Slate's political analyst, sees a bigger picture, and most of you won't like this. Dickerson writes, Sarah Palin has special medicine. That's about the only clear conclusion to be drawn from Tuesday's primary results. She backed five candidates in Arizona, Florida, and Alaska, and they all won. The rest of the results from the evening defied easy matching, writes John Dickerson on Slate. But the Miami Herald says Democrats see a potential Miller victory in Alaska as a chance to win that Senate seat for the Democrats in November, since he would be another Tea Partier who they could paint as too radical. His comments include questioning the constitutionality of unemployment insurance. The New York Times editorial page today takes a shot at both parties in analyzing the results of Tuesday. It says much of the GOP's fervid populist energy has been churned up by playing on some people's fears of Hispanics and Muslims. And the Times chides scaredy-cat Democrats for, quote, fleeing solid accomplishments on health care, financial reform, and the economy. It says President Obama and his party have little time left to gin up enthusiasm. And in an exclusive interview with Roger Simon on Politico, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says he offered to resign this summer after wrongly firing Shirley Sherrod. And before you call for a higher fence along the Mexican border, check this out. Vilsack also said in that interview that food would be a lot more expensive without illegal immigrants. This is the Agriculture Secretary of the United States. And he said, quote, if you didn't have these folks, you would be spending 3, 4, or 5 times more for food, or we would have to import food and have all the security risks, unquote. So there's a little politics checklist for today. Meanwhile, remember this from the Obama presidential campaign?
It was a creed written into the founding documents that declared the destiny of the nation. Yes, we can.
Just a music video from Will.i.am of Black Eyed Peas, but it went so viral online that it was considered one of the reasons that Obama won the White House. But now a study from NYU finds Republicans are beginning to out-Twitter, out-Facebook, and out-YouTube Democrats, and that it matters to the outcome of elections. Let's talk to the author of the study, Scott Galloway, Stern School of Business professor at NYU, and the founder of L2, a think tank for digital innovation. Scott Galloway, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
What did you measure for this study?
We measured how well candidates were doing across various social media platforms. So we looked at the biggest ones, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Also looked at their online buzz by using various metrics, trying to figure out what the sentiment was around specific candidates. And then we looked at things such as site traffic. So around the social media platforms, we look at what their followership is and how robust their content is, what they're pushing out.
And what did you find in general comparing the parties?
In general, the findings were quite striking. We found that the Republicans party or Republican senators were vastly outpacing Democrats, that almost across every dimension, Republicans were signing up followers faster, doing a better job that they seem to have greater acumen, or were being more aggressive around the medium. And not only that, there's evidence that their message seems to be gaining greater traction online and attracting more followers and likes.
Of all people, you found that South Carolina Republican Jim DeMint has what you call the greatest digital velocity. What does that measure?
Well, in terms of, a couple of things. For example, John McCain has the most followers on Twitter and also the most likes. But to a certain extent, and this is why IQ is an apt analogy, some of it is inherited by pure virtue of the fact that he was his party's presidential nominee. So he probably got a million, he probably inherited a million Twitter followers. Whereas DeMint has really earned it. This is more nurture than nature. He's really worked hard. He's been very aggressive. So, for example, he's employing what we refer to as a follower strategy. He has gone out and followed 30,000 people on Twitter, or most likely an intern in his office has gone out and followed 30,000 people on Twitter. And it's not necessarily because he's interested in getting information or tweets from these 30,000 people. That would be impossible to follow. But a follower strategy results on Twitter, 20 to 30% of the people you follow will follow you back. So this is one of the ways, this is just an example of how the DeMint office is being very aggressive about social media.
And just to be clear, the study precisely was measuring the digital IQ, so to speak, of current U.S. senators. You weren't looking beyond the U.S. Senate for this particular study?
No, we've done this for several industries, pharmaceuticals, beauty, luxury, automobile, but this was just a look at the 100 U.S. senators.
Is Jim DeMint spending his time personally sending out tweets and posting on people's walls?
That's the correct question. We hope so. Typically, and what you see with candidates who get the kind of pickup or entities or brands that get the sort of followership that Jim DeMint or Senator DeMint is enjoying, typically it is them. Consumers or voters do seem to have a sixth sense for authenticity. And his followership and likes have grown at such a velocity that either someone is very in touch with his sentiment or he himself is doing it. But typically you know, when you read some of Sarah Palin's tweets, no matter what you think of them, they ring as true, don't they? And as a result, the authenticity comes through and the followership is there.
Listeners, if you are involved with politics in the digital sphere, call us up. Tell us about what you're doing, for what candidate or what cause. If you're involved in this, keeping track of who's doing well, who's doing not so well, do you see Republicans getting ahead of Democrats in general, as our guest Scott Galloway from NYU found with respect to Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats? 212-433-WNYC. What's the state of the art here? If you work on a campaign in this election year, work in online politics in any respect, what's the state of the art right now? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet it to us, or post it on our Facebook page, or write about it on our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Here's a clip of Republican Senator Scott Brown, just elected this year, of course, from Massachusetts, from one of his campaign videos that featured man-on-the-street interviews.
Hi, my name is Eric Weston. I'm supporting Scott Brown for the Senate race. I'm tired of the same old politics in Boston. I think it's time for a change. I think we need someone like Scott Brown to come in there and vote against the health care bill that's trying to be passed through the Senate right now.
I'm supporting Scott Brown because I believe, first and foremost, that too much government is a problem right now. This state is far too liberal. There's no bipartisanship.
Now, that, I believe, was from an online video, Scott. That was not a campaign commercial that was bought for TV airtime. Is that one of the things that you look at?
Yeah, well, this notion of earned media, that if you put together something that resonates or that has some sort of breakthrough creative quality to it, as we were talking about in California, I think Fiorina ran a very abstract ad and then put it on YouTube. But the notion now is that people are saying, rather than just spending a ton of money to put a message out, what can they put out there that gets forwarded or emailed around, this notion of earned media? And as you just played, it seemed like this message brought to you by the voters seemed to resonate and was forwarded around a bit.
And you rank Scott Brown pretty high in general, right?
Scott Brown, there's really kind of two seminal moments in the history of social media as it relates to politics. And the first was Barack Obama Inc., if you will, was probably the first organization within or outside of politics to really unlock the power of social media, right? 13 million email signups, 50 million hours of YouTube viewership, 2/3 of $1 billion raised online. And then Scott Brown, garnered 10 times the number of Facebook likes and overcame a deficit both in terms of fundraising and name recognition to win the seat, beat his candidate, his opposition, Martha Coakley, in what had been, as you know, a Democratic stronghold. That really was kind of the second big moment.
And was it because his campaign did something particularly right, or were the people just ready for that campaign?
I think the answer is yes. I think social media, like our mics here or the telephone, are a tool, and they're a very powerful tool. But you have to give people a reason to believe. But when you have a message that seems to resonate, it seems that what we might have here, Brian, is we might have a tool that is leveling the playing field in the sense that to date, I think there's a decent argument that the primary drivers or predictors of victory in politics have been one, name recognition, and then funds raised. And it looks like your ability to leverage social media around a message that resonates may be creeping up as one of the more important indicators.
That's a really big statement, if true, because for one, it would level the playing field with respect to campaign finance. And for another, it seems to put a lot of populist power out there, right? Because these are peer-to-peer, what you call earned media views that people are getting. But can you really measure it? Because it is really a big statement to say that fundraising and name recognition may no longer be the most accurate predictors of victory as opposed to what you're calling digital IQ.
We'll see. We looked at some heated races, the race in Nevada between incumbent Senator Reid and his challenger Sharon Angle, the race between Senator Boxer and Carly Fiorina. And if, in fact, for example, in the race in California, Carly Fiorina has a much greater following on social media, which in our view is an indicator. If, in fact, you believe that social media takes the temperature of sentiment and you believe that sentiment translates to intention and then ultimately intention translates to action, you might have this crystal ball.
It at least takes the temperature of intense sentiment. Is that a good way to put it? Where people are angry and ready for change, like in 2008, the Democrats had all this pent-up energy and really wanted to move on after the Bush era. Right now, so many people who don't like Obama are so energized about not liking Obama more than Democrats. Is that a measure that you see online, or is that relevant to this question?
Yeah, I do think something's going on here. It does feel as if when you have people as far to the right getting so much more traction than people far to the left, our thesis originally, Brian, was it would make sense that people on the polls, the most conservative, the most liberal centers, would get a greater following because this whole notion of the long tail of the web attracts and gets together people with more extreme views. It's a place for them to come together. But what we found, in fact, is that the most progressive senators or most liberal actually had the lowest or the weakest following. That the relationship going from liberal to conservative there was a correlation, a positive correlation between digital IQ.
So the more conservative a voting record a senator had, the higher their digital IQ by the way you measured it.
The greater their following.
Why?
Well, again, that's the correct question, but the leap you make is that these messages coming from conservative senators seem to be resonating with people, as indicated by the following they're getting on these social media platforms.
For NYU business professor Scott Galloway and founder of L2, a think tank for digital innovation, and his measure of the so-called digital IQ of U.S. senators, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Tony in Windsor Terrace, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon. Hi. Or actually, good morning. I hope I can articulate this right. I'm wondering if you see any discord or irony in the Republicans or the Christian right using a technology that came about as a result of, enlightenment, exploration of ideas and, invention to discount other ideas that came about as a result of the same innovation, so a sort of a hatred of science and, ideas in general, using technology to bang all that other stuff down. I don't know if that makes sense.
Scott?
That question's way above my pay grade. I would just say that what we found is no matter how far right they are, what their beliefs are, that people seem to be embracing this medium. I haven't seen, and it sounds like the caller has a lot more knowledge about this than I do, any senators sort of shunning this technology because they feel it's somewhat contrary to some of their core beliefs. We have seen, as a matter of fact, the most conservative senators really embracing this technology. The irony in that, or the lack of irony in there, I think is again, I think that's something that the callers thought more about than certainly I have.
Tony, thank you for your call. It's interesting to me that you're a business professor. You're not a political science professor. In fact, you were telling me off the air that you've done these kinds of studies for industry, and some of your friends and colleagues asked you to do it this year for politicians. Do you think you have a different take on this, or a different way of measuring it, or a different way of interpreting your results coming out of the business school world than people who are constantly doing politics?
I'd hope so. I think we'd look at this where, you know, we think we're a nonpartisan organization. We're very data driven, and we're simply just looking. We approach this more from what I'd call a social media viewpoint, and that is looking at the same metrics we would evaluate a Coca-Cola or a Ford Motor. And that is, we see this essentially the senators as brands that are trying to get a message out that resonates and trying to capture 51% market share on a given date. And that date is obviously the election. So I think we're looking at this at a fairly, what I would like to think, is an agnostic viewpoint.
One more caller. Mac in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mac.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I'm thinking that maybe this could be it's like the message is very simple when it's on a social media platform. You know, Twitter's got however many characters, and on Facebook there isn't a whole lot of, you know, it's not a very deep message. So perhaps looking at it, like you just said, the market share and branding, oversimplified is what comes to mind. You know, like this message is, these guys' IQ is higher, or whatever, however you refer to it.
And the conservative message tends to be breakable down. The conservative messages can be communicated in general, a lot of liberals say, in simpler terms.
Let me try and do that without judgment and say, not so much in simpler terms, but in more like branded terms, in less words, in more like, yo, this is the way it is kind of statement.
Right.
And that works better on social networking. It's less popularity and more just a measure of the way the message is capable
it's
of
an
being communicated.
It's an interesting question. I mean, Chuck Schumer wrote a whole book just a couple of years ago based around the idea that Republicans were able to state their platform in six words, something like small government and patriotism, you know, whatever. And that Democrats didn't have that equivalent. And he wanted to look for that Democratic equivalent. That was before the 2008 campaign. But do you think Max's theory is right, that makes the conservative message easier to communicate via the social media, which tend to be in short bursts?
I think Max's point is the correct one, in that an ability to distill an offering down to a message that's easily memorable or easily communicated is key not only in politics but across any brand offering. Walmart means value. It's just very easy to explain, right? You know, Ferrari means speed or performance. These brands just immediately hit us with a very clear, succinct message. Just as a viewpoint of kind of man on the street as it relates to politics, the catchphrase I remember from the presidential elections was "Yes, we can," which was the brand message, if you will, the tagline from the Obama campaign. So I personally believe that both parties have been equally adept or inept at coming up with catchphrases and distilling their messages depending upon the campaign and the period of time we're talking about.
Well, by your measure, our upcoming guests should be very digitally smart, because they are the two conservative Republicans hoping for the nomination in the September 14th New York primary to run against Chuck Schumer. So we'll see. We'll take their digital IQ in one way or another. Are you going to follow up on this, since this is a rare foray into studying political communication for you?
Yeah, we're going to do senators next year as well. But what we're really excited about is we're also going to look at other government agencies. We're going to measure all the departments, Department of Energy, Justice. We're going to look at the Armed Services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, the IRS, we're basically going to look at all the government entities and try and get a better feel for how well they're communicating with their constituents.
Are you looking at campaigns in real time by these measures as they're going on this fall?
We've done some of that. Some people have reached out to us and asked us to look at themselves and their competitors and do an audit of what they're doing and give them some advice on how they could do better.
Scott Galloway is associate clinical professor at the NYU Stern School of Business and the founder of L2, a think tank for digital innovation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Burnson and Townsend next, the two Republicans running to run against Chuck Schumer.